content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Healthcare's Journey with Machines, How Artificial Intelligence is Changing the Greater Triangle's Healthcare Landscape While Presenting New Sets of Challenges. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, The Rise of AI in Healthcare. Artificial intelligence is rapidly gaining steam across the healthcare industry, bringing with it new risk-reward scenarios. And this is written by Zach Ezone. The death of his mother in 2015 from pancreatic cancer led Marcel Frankel to search for answers. Frankel, who was working at the Duke Human Vaccine Institute, looked for technologies that could have prevented her death. This led Frankel to team up with Duke University professor Bruce Donald and researcher Mark Hallin, who were working on algorithms that use artificial intelligence to generate new proteins to fight diseases. After a few years, the group spun out the technology from the lab and formed a company, 1063 Therapeutics, to carry it forward. The company is using its AI drug discovery platform to pursue targets that are considered undruggable, meaning disease targets where conventional methods of drug development have fallen short. The end goal at 1063 is that no patient has to hear they are out of options ever again, says Frankel, the company's CEO. 1063's early efforts have grabbed the interest of investors, leading the company to close a nearly $16 million Series A round earlier this year. The company isn't alone in attracting interest in this space. Other Triangle companies, such as Collaborations Pharmaceuticals and Raleigh, share their ambitious goals. We've been living through the biotech revolution in the pharmaceutical industry, and AI could be the next revolution for the industry, says Sean Eakin, CEO of Collaborations. If we could do something like that here in the Triangle, develop a new technology and it really takes off, this place would be unidentifiable in 30 years' time. This funding and interest centers on the hope that these sorts of AI platforms can lead to advancements in drug development, a lengthy and expensive process that leads to far more failures than successes. Among the more than $4 trillion in healthcare spending annually in the U.S., almost a quarter goes into administrative expenses. Now, add AI to the efficiency quotient and the return on investment balloons for the investor. The healthcare AI sector in the U.S. is expected to surge from $5 billion in investments in 2020 to over $45 billion by 2026. The truth is there is a serious problem around the economics of drugs, Frankel says. They are very expensive. They are very difficult to make. There's a huge benefit to be able to make these cheaper, faster, and in a more effective way. Drug developers aren't the only ones interested in this technology. Health systems such as Duke Health and UNC Health are leaning into how AI could change how they operate their hospitals and treat patients. Advancements like generative AI could be the most disruptive technology in a generation, says Jeffrey Ferranti, Chief Digital Officer at Duke Health. However, the technology comes with inherent risks, such as algorithms that produced incorrect information or issues related to race or gender that go unnoticed by a clinician. The stakes are high with what we do in medicine, and we want to make sure that we're taking all precautions necessary, Ferranti says. But the truth is what we're trying to balance is, what if we don't make this technology available to our doctors? Delivering care. Healthcare has lagged behind other industries in its adoption of AI, but advancements in the technology, specifically around large language models like ChatGPT, have fueled a wave of momentum in the space. About 9 months ago, Duke Health began working on a partnership with Microsoft with the intention of shifting its workforce from an on-premise system to a cloud environment, but the scope of this partnership expanded with the advancements of generative AI in recent months, Ferranti says. This led Duke and Microsoft to agree to a 5-year partnership with the aim of figuring out how to use generative AI to improve efficiencies and reduce the administrative burden on its employees amid industry-wide staff shortages. There's a lot of administrative burden in healthcare and inefficiencies around scheduling, supply chain optimization, Ferranti says. We're going to start with those things because those are probably the safest areas to start that don't have direct patient impact. Information overload is one of the underlying causes of inefficiencies in healthcare. Dealing with vast amounts of data is one of the strengths of newer AI technology. UNC Health is working with the healthcare software company Epic to look at how generative AI could help with tasks such as patient chart summarization, says David McSwain, Chief Medical Informatics Officer at UNC Health. The idea is that the generative AI can take an immense amount of information in a patient chart that would take a provider an hour to review, consolidate it, and present it to providers in a more concise way that allows them to understand the challenges that our patients are facing more effectively, McSwain says. UNC is also part of a pilot program with Epic that uses AI to draft messages to patients from physicians. The technology doesn't automatically send the messages, which have to be reviewed by a physician, but it's aimed at offloading some of the administrative burden that physicians juggle. These sorts of administrative tasks are typically how hospitals begin bringing AI into their practices, as these are safer tasks without direct patient involvement. The widespread use of AI in more clinical-type settings may be more than 5 years away, says Nikhil Sani, a partner at McKinsey & Company. Hospitals are initially focusing on administrative tasks because that's where they will see the financial return on investment. On the clinical side, improvements could be seen in areas like quality and safety, which don't automatically translate to dollars. The first evaluations are all happening on a financial basis because that's the hard dollars, Sani says. Especially coming out of the pandemic and interest rates going up on everyone's debt, there's too much financial pressure not to start with financial AI use cases. Identifying better ways to use AI in healthcare could generate billions of dollars in savings nationwide. U.S. healthcare spending hit $4.3 trillion in 2021, accounting for 18.3% of gross domestic product. Wider adoption of the technology could lead to savings of 5 to 10%, according to a paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research that Sani worked on. Despite the ability to create these savings, the broad adoption of AI in healthcare has been slow for various reasons, including caution due to the life and death nature of healthcare, a lack of access to enough quality data that limits the potential for biases, and some level of mistrust from patients. Bringing more AI into healthcare also comes with potential risks and scrutiny from regulators. For instance, last year, California Attorney General Rob Bonta sent letters to hospital executives in the state requesting information about the algorithms that they use to help make decisions. This hasn't happened in North Carolina, but it caught hospitals in California unprepared, says Michael Pensina, Vice Dean for Data Science at Duke University School of Medicine and Director of Duke AI Health. Duke has around 60 AI algorithms that are tracked by an internal monitoring board. This framework, called Algorithm-Based Clinical Decision Support, was put in place about 2 years ago. Prior to the arrival of COVID-19, the health system was hearing from startups and larger entities that were trying to sell an algorithm or computational platform, and Duke didn't have the ability to verify the company's claims. The COVID-19 pandemic brought to the forefront inefficiencies and problems around health equity within healthcare systems, Pensina says. The health system created this governance structure that's involved in this next major effort of evaluating how to use generative AI and large language models in practice. Large language models were a wake-up call, Pensina says. All of a sudden, at Thanksgiving dinner, you start asking questions and getting answers beyond what other technology could do. Developing drugs. AI could enable companies to develop new drugs quicker and more successfully, which is critical for areas like the Triangle, where companies pour millions of dollars into research and development efforts. But despite the vast resources allocated to drug development, the process remains long and costly and leads to success rates in the single digits, says Stephen Pike, Chief Digital and Data Officer at Parexel, a large contract research organization headquartered in Durham. This is not going to be transformative in the sense that it's going to be everything we touch turns to gold, Pike says. But even if you could notch up, let's say, from a 1% success rate to 2% or 4%, you're talking about doubling productivity or halving development costs potentially. Parexel recently struck a partnership with Partex to leverage the latter's AI platform with the aim of benefiting pharma and biotech companies. Aside from the drug discovery efforts, Parexel is using AI on simpler tasks, including reviewing monitoring reports from clinical studies. The use of AI in this context of the clinical research part of drug development has skyrocketed in recent years, and it's only likely to increase, Pike says. Velocity Clinical Research of Durham relies on AI to take patient data and better match them with clinical trials that they're eligible for within Velocity's network of more than 80 clinical research sites across three countries. The intention is to improve patient recruitment and retention in clinical trials, which are some of the most challenging areas of clinical research, Velocity CEO Paul Evans says. But Evans is most intrigued by how AI could be used to identify novel drug targets. One of the biggest challenges you face in pharmaceutical development is matching compounds to target diseases, he says. Sometimes the way that gets done is almost serendipitous, where somebody has a good idea and tries it. Being able to have a tool that would identify compounds that will work in real-life patients could really be exciting. In drug development, AI technology has reached the point where it's more generative rather than solely predictive. This is a big change, says Collaborations Eakins, who has been involved in using computational algorithms in drug development for the past 3 decades. Before, we would have to design the molecule ourselves, and then the AI would make a prediction, Eakins says. We're at the point where the computers are basically designing the molecule and making the prediction. What this means is that a small company like Collaborations has about 14 employees at its office in NC State University Centennial Campus, can work on about 20 different projects in various disease areas. Collaborations has developed software that it licenses to other companies to create a revenue stream that the company then invests in building its own pipeline of molecules. This process, plus the nearly $17 million the company has received in grant funding, has supported its efforts since forming in 2015. The biggest opportunity for us at the moment is in opioid use disorder, Eakin says. We have an active program with funding from National Institute on Drug Abuse to try to come up with molecules that were designed through the generative software to basically ensure that individuals don't want to try opioids. Like Collaborations, 1063 can use its technology to tackle more ambitious projects than a typical drug company of its size. 1063 has about 11 employees, a number that's growing. The company's lead program targets an oncogene, a cancer-driving protein called MYC. M-Y-C, it's spelled, that has been the subject of decades worth of research. While it's still in its early stages, 1063 has seen some positive results. We're seeing the ability to find solutions that are completely novel and more potent, says Frankel of 1063. Despite the momentum, Frankel acknowledges the company has a long path ahead of it. While 1063 sees a lot of value and promise in its technology, it doesn't solve all the challenges of drug development. We've brought a tractor to a digging site that was previously using a shovel, Frankel says, but you still have to build a building. Addressing risks. There are risks as health systems and drug developers invest more in AI, something Eakins at Collaborations experienced firsthand. In 2021, the company was invited to a conference at Switzerland's Spies Laboratory, which is focused on identifying advancements in biology and chemistry that could have potential implications as use for weapons. Collaborations gave a presentation on how AI could be misused in drug development. Eakins and his team came up with a simple experiment that involved using the company's technology to identify molecules like the toxic nerve agent VX. In fewer than 6 hours, the company's model generated a massive amount of 40,000 molecules. The AI designed VX, other known chemical warfare agents, and new molecules that may have been even more toxic. This was an unexpected result that grabbed the attention of the science community, the press, and the White House. Eakins, via a Zoom call, spoke with the team at the White House about why Collaborations published the results of the experiment, the company's motivations, and what it did with data. The biggest surprise of the whole ordeal, aside from the reception, is how easy it was, Eakins says. The company ran the experiment through a 2015 Apple desktop computer. It was very trivial to do what we did, Eakin says. Obviously, we didn't make the compounds and we didn't test them, but the technology can do it, and that, I think, was a big wake-up call. Eakins, who describes AI as the biggest change to drug development in at least 5 years, says he's worried about the power of some of these technologies, and regulations, at least on the software side, seem difficult to implement. We did a lot of things with open source technology, Eakin says. There's so much that's already out there that someone could hack together the tools to do what we did. How do you regulate that? Regulators are trying to grapple with how to handle the rapid development and adoption of AI by companies and sectors, including pharma and healthcare. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration earlier this year began soliciting feedback for regulations around the use of AI and machine learning in drug development. The World Health Organization earlier this year raised concerns about how the precipitous adoption of untested systems could lead to errors by healthcare workers and cause harm to patients. The organization called for oversight around biases in data that the AI is trained on and whether large language models are able to protect sensitive data that's entered to generate a response. Congress has also shown interest in how AI could and is being used in the delivery of healthcare, but major legislation has yet to be moved forward, says Ferranti at Duke Health. We have to take a balanced and thoughtful approach to these new technologies, Ferranti says. If we just shut everything down, which, by the way, I don't think we could do, what we can do is make sure we are developing these technologies in a trustworthy and thoughtful way. Part of Duke's partnership with Microsoft involves researching how to address some of the issues inherent in bringing AI into healthcare. One primary area of concern is around digital hallucinations in large language models, which essentially are situations where the AI makes up information. One example would be, I could ask the AI to summarize the literature of a disease and provide references, Ferranti says. It might do a great job summarizing all of that, but in the references, four are real and one looks real, but the article doesn't exist. Hospitals are also grappling with ideas around bias and equity. AI algorithms can pick up information and data that humans are unable to, which sometimes includes information about race or gender. This could lead to the algorithms building treatment protocols by incorporating information without healthcare providers knowing. Another concern revolves around how AI algorithms perform over time. Ferranti cites an algorithm that Duke Hospital uses to predict when a patient is going to have a bloodstream infection called sepsis, about 2 days before a human doctor can predict it. This sends up an alert that causes providers to evaluate the patient to begin testing and treatment. But over time, the performance of the algorithm can degrade and its ability to make predictions can become less reliable. Given some of the areas of potential concern around the technology, Duke has opted for a stepwise approach to integrating AI into different areas of the system, beginning with more administrative responsibilities, Ferranti says. AI can replace roles in healthcare and other sectors, but that shouldn't be the goal. Instead, the technology should be used to augment human capabilities, Ferranti says. A lot of conversations around AI have gone to the extremes, he says. Generative AI is going to save the world, or generative AI is going to destroy the world. And I think the conversation is in the middle. The thoughtful approach about how we roll this out is going to be the difference between a technology that can really have a positive impact on a lot of people in my world, a lot of patients, versus something that could have really negative societal consequences. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Rising interest in second homes. The rush to own a second home that marked the pandemic could be changing and evolving. According to data from Redfin, the price of homes in the popular beach locale of Carteret County is $420,000, up 7% year over year. But the number of homes sold is down 21.3%, and median days on the market is now 21, not 11, as it was a year ago. There are plenty of factors led by rising interest rates. What is emerging is more interest in fractional ownership as Americans look to share the cost of vacation homes. Raggetts Associates tracks the fractional ownership industry and recorded a record sales volume of $1.7 billion in 2007, but those numbers soon dropped with the Great Recession, hitting $190 million by 2015. That number shot up to $624 million in 2022. Entrepreneur Matt Williamson launched Plum Co-Ownership in 2022 as a way for those with disposable income, but not enough for a 37-foot Grady White to have a vacation place. The company based in Durham's American Underground is seeing more interest in markets such as Emerald Isle, Oak Island, and Topsail, where prices aren't as high as, say, Wrightsville Beach, but the demand for rental options is keen. We've learned that if you think about the demographic that can generally afford a vacation house, it's generally high net worth individuals, Williamson says. But the people who want to do this next rung, the professionals, are doing amazing things, but they are not in a place where making a $1 million investment makes sense. So they're using co-ownership to step into that aspiration. One key point he's seeing, unlike ultra-wealthy people, those looking at fractional ownership have an investment mindset. What we've noticed is they tend to be thoughtful about which locations potentially have a good return, Williamson says. New number 10 course set to open in Pinehurst. The Pinehurst Resort plans to have its new number 10 course ready in time for visitors to the 2024 U.S. Open. The resort expects number 10 to open on April 3rd, about 2 months before the U.S. Open is played on Pinehurst number 2. April 3 will not only be another great day in Pinehurst history, but for our future as well, Pinehurst Resort CEO Bob Dedman said, Jr. says. The course will be the resort's first new course on a new property since number 8 opened in 1996. Raleigh ranks high for home lot size. Despite the push for more missing middle housing, Raleigh ranks high in terms of spacious living for home size. Raleigh is the top-ranked city in a recent report from Storage Cafe. Nationally, the report says the median size of a new single-family home is around 2,299 square feet, 4% smaller than 10 years ago. The median lot size, now 8,891 square feet, is down 8% over the decade. Raleigh ranks number 1 on the list with a median home size of 1,950 square feet and a lot size of 10,450 square feet. Atlanta is number 2 and Charlotte comes in at number 3 among cities offering the most spacious living. Cities in the South seem to offer the best chance at spacious living in terms of homes and backyards. At the other end of the spectrum, Midwest and East Coast cities come in lowest for space. Philadelphia is the worst city for space, according to the report. Golden Corral lauded in report. Raleigh's Golden Corral is one of the largest restaurant chains in the country, number 47 to be exact, according to the latest annual Technomic Top 500 Chain Restaurant Report. The rank is one place higher than the chain saw last year, with its sales growing from $1.16 billion in 2021 to $1.4 billion in 2022. Rising sales figures were seen across the country, with the top 500 reporting total sales up by 8.4%. The growth came entirely from high menu price inflation and more aggressive unit development, according to the report. The total number of Golden Corral units, however, dropped from 392 in 2021 to 362 last year. The brand, known as a family-friendly buffet with value pricing, has begun testing out new concepts with the goal of expanding its reach. Golden Corral is the only North Carolina company to break the top 50 of this year's report. McDonald's topped the report at number 1, followed by Starbucks, Chick-fil-A, Taco Bell, and Wendy's. Leader slides over one county. A fast-growing Greater Triangle County has a new leader and a familiar face to help continue its growth. Stephen Barrington has been selected to serve as the director of Harnett County Economic Development and will assume the role on September 18, according to the county. Barrington has served as the executive director of neighboring Sampson County Economic Development for the past 4 years and has more than 15 years of economic and workforce development experience. He was first hired as economic development director for the Wake Forest Chamber of Commerce at the end of 1999. Barrington says economic development is a team sport and he looks forward to collaboration in the community. Based on location and the region, Harnett County is likely to experience faster growth, business and residential, for well over the next 20 years, he says. This is exciting, and I'm delighted and grateful for the opportunity to serve Harnett County and to be part of a dedicated team of local economic developers that are focused on supporting and spurring private sector investment across the county. And finally, Blue Cross NC makes change. Amid pressure from advocacy groups, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina has removed nearly 50 HIV drugs from its most costly drug categories. The move follows the HIV plus Hepatitis Policy Institute and North Carolina AIDS Action Network filing discrimination complaints against the state's largest health insurer for placing 48 HIV drugs at these highest tiers. This decision was undone in a mid-year drug formulary that Blue Cross NC recently released, which removed all HIV drugs from those tiers. And now we turn to the top news story in the Triangle Business Journal. RDU gets green light for new $500 million runway. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's long-planned $500 million runway is a big step closer to becoming a reality. The Federal Aviation Administration, after years of assessments and analysis, issued its official authorization at the end of August. That means the airport can move forward toward building a new runway, something officials say is critical to attract more airlines and flights in the years ahead, including international destinations. Other capital projects at RDU depend on the new runway, such as expanding Terminal 2 to hold more gates and passengers. The new runway will be more than 10,600 feet long and is expected to be completed by 2028. The existing primary runway is 10,000 feet and was built in the 1980s. RDU officials say it's in dire need of replacement. The plan for the new runway calls for putting it more than 500 feet west of the current airstrip, allowing the current runway to remain in operation during construction. Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority CEO Michael Landguth says having the FAA authorization is a critical step in the process. It gives airlines some certainty that we're on a path to get a replacement runway there, so they know it will be up and running all the time, Landguth says, noting that despite the imminent end of the current runway's lifespan, airlines have never really stopped expressing interest in offering new destinations at RDU. Bill Sandifer, Chief Development Officer at RDU, says the next step is to apply for state and local permits. Those applications should be sent in the next 30 to 60 days. Sandifer says construction could start next year. In the meantime, there's site work that can happen sooner, such as the demolition of three buildings near Lumley Road. The current terminals at RDU are designed to serve 16.5 million passengers annually, a number officials say the airport will eclipse in 2026. The figure was just shy of 12 million passengers in 2022. Terminal 2, the 36-gate building that supports the bulk of RDU's traffic, including its nonstop flights to Paris, London, and Iceland, is limited with the current runway. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. We start with On Tech and Banking, written by Lauren Onasorge. Raleigh Hub pitched by Obama to ramp up. More dollars to flow to Power America, which launched back in 2014. In January 2014, President Barack Obama announced Raleigh as the pick for a new manufacturing innovation hub, later known as Power America. He told a large crowd at NC State University the move was about global competitiveness. I don't want the next big job-creating discovery, the research and technology, to be in Germany or China or Japan, Obama said. I want it to be right here in the United States of America. I want it to be right here in North Carolina. The resulting $140 million hub led by NC State would focus on the next generation of power electronics. Now, nearly 10 years later, the Department of Energy is extending its bet on the effort, funneling another $8 million with the potential for $32 million in total new DOE funding over the next 5 years. As the cost of the hub is shared with the private sector, the funding renewal opportunity could be worth up to $64 million. Victor Veliadis, the NC State professor serving as executive director and chief technology officer of Power America, says the new funding is validating both to what the consortium has already accomplished and what it will do next. Veliadis, speaking from Taiwan, says there is still a nationwide shortage of technologists skilled in next-generation semiconductor manufacturing, and that's a problem as the U.S. tries to carve out a power position in the space. The semiconductor materials it works with, including Wolfspeed's sweet spot of silicon carbide, are more efficient than traditional silicon. The consortium exists not only to train future workers in the sector, but to also innovate ways to manufacture the materials and power devices they create at scale. Each year, the 90 members of the consortium descend on NC State to look at problems in the space and identify new projects. And project by project, the manufacturing industry learns more about what power devices can do, resulting in new products and new jobs. The outcomes of that work will benefit everybody, Veliadis says. Triangle pushes for federal designation as a tech hub. A consortium from the Triangle is among those vying for the Federal Tech Hubs Grant Program, a title that could come with $75 million in funding. Quietly, a local effort is underway to get the Triangle designated as the official Advanced Communications and Immersive Technologies Hub. At least seven entities in North Carolina are competing for the formal recognition. Applications closed on August 15th. Phase one of the Tech Hubs program, part of the Federal CHIPS Act, will appoint 20 cities with the Tech Hub status. The U.S. Economic Development Administration will announce the top 20 cities this fall. The number will be trimmed to five to ten cities for phase two. The local proposal says the private sector has committed to the effort, including Cisco, NFF, Solido, and Global Impact Partners. Also, IBM, Red Hat, and SAS are among the Triangle companies considering backing the effort. And finally, three banks' CRE loans beyond 300%. Some community banks in the Triangle continue to bet on commercial real estate, at times skirting regulatory guidelines designed to keep loan concentrations in check. Out of 40 community banks in North Carolina analyzed by Raymond James, three locals, First Carolina Bank, Providence Bank, and KS Bank, exceed the so-called 300% rule. They're the same three banks that skirted it the previous quarter. The rule can lead to extra oversight when a bank's total CRE loan volume represents 300% or more of its capital. The banks over the rule are First Carolina Bank at 417.9%, Providence Bank at 401.7%, and KS Bank at 301.6%. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. Durham AgTech gets extended Bayer deal. Pairwise says the deal will focus on creating new options for corn. A Durham startup focused on gene editing has landed a new multi-million dollar agreement with Bayer to drive innovation in corn production. It's the second deal between Pairwise and the life sciences giant, following a previous five-year collaboration centered on corn, soy, wheat, and other crops. That deal culminated in June with Bayer exercising an option to move forward 27 novel traits that Pairwise developed into the company's pipeline. Bayer paid Pairwise $100 million for research under the previous collaboration, which Pairwise announced with Monsanto in 2018 before the latter was officially acquired by Bayer. The startup received an additional payment for the traits that Bayer moved forward and is in line to receive royalties on future commercial products. Financial details of the new five-year collaboration were not disclosed, but it represents a significant deal for Pairwise, CEO Tom Adams says. Like the first deal, Pairwise will receive funding for research, plus the opportunity to earn success-based milestones and potential royalties. While the first agreement covered various crops, this second collaboration is focused on Pairwise using its gene editing platform, called Fulcrum, to develop short-stature corn. The crop is designed to be 30 to 40% shorter than traditional corn and feature a thicker stalk. This variety has multiple production and sustainability benefits, Pairwise says. For instance, it's less prone to crop loss attributable to severe weather events and allows for more precise application of crop protection products and fertilizers. This is transformative, Adams says. It completely changes how growers can manage their crops. The deal also provides Pairwise with a source of non-dilutive funding to further drive forward its gene editing platform. And because of the singular focus of this deal, Pairwise can pursue partnerships with other companies either through licensing deals or direct collaborations, Adams says. Pairwise is also looking to raise capital from investors. The startup, since becoming operational in 2018, has raised $115 million through two funding rounds from investors like Deerfield Management and Aliment Capital. While Pairwise is using its platform to partner with larger companies to address challenges in large acre crops, the startup is also focused on developing better fruits and vegetables that are served direct to consumers. It has launched an initial commercial product, a mix of leafy greens called Conscious Green. The leafy greens launched in select restaurants earlier this year and will move into retail stores either later this year or early 2024. This product has doubled the nutritional value of typical salad greens while maintaining a leaf texture that's closer to lettuce. Sage cuts staff after setback from the FDA. Sage Therapeutics, a public company with operations in Raleigh, is cutting nearly half its workforce after mixed news from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The FDA in August approved zuranolone, a drug developed by Sage and partner Biogen for postpartum depression, but rejected it for major depressive disorder. The companies had applied to market the drug as a treatment for both, with major depression representing a much larger market. Now, Sage is taking drastic action to preserve some cash. It announced August 31 plans to cut about 40% of its workers. Based on the firm's most recent annual filing early this year, this would imply around 276 employees. And finally, Restore 3D completes acquisition. Restore 3D, a medical device firm in Durham, has completed its acquisition of Conformis. As part of the cash deal, Restore 3D agreed to pay $2.27 per share for the public company, an amount that represents a 96% premium to Conformis' stock price from when the deal was announced in late June. It's the second deal that Restore 3D has completed in recent years, further expanding the company's portfolio of orthopedic devices. With the closing of the deal, which Conformis shareholders approved on August 31, the company's stock is no longer trading on the NASDAQ. And now we turn to On Retail and Restaurants, written by Laura Brumette. Chicken concept to open in the Triangle. Dave's Hot Chicken plans to open in Holly Springs and Wake Forest. Dave's Hot Chicken, a well-known brand in the hot chicken game, has announced its first Triangle location will be at Holly Springs Town Center along Highway 55. The fast casual restaurant is slated to open in the former home of the Mason Jar Tavern. The 2,500 square foot space will feature counter service and will serve the same menu found at other Dave's locations. That includes its signature fried chicken tenders with 7 spice level options, sliders, coleslaw, macaroni and cheese, and fries. The Dave's Hot Chicken location is owned by a local franchisee team that includes Russell and Laureen Hansen. The group brought the brand to North Carolina with the opening of its Wilmington store last year. The group also owns 4 Blaze Pizza restaurants in the Triangle area and 2 at the coast, says Amanda Mundick, Vice President of Operations for the group. A Wake Forest location of Dave's Hot Chicken is already in the works, she says. The group has the rights for the Dave's brand in the Triangle region and plans to open more, though a specific number is not yet in mind. The Charlotte area has 2 locations under different ownership. The Holly Springs store will be the 4th location in the state. The Holly Springs location has been in the works since the spring, Mundick says. The Mason Jar Tavern closed in early June, according to the restaurant's Facebook page. At the end of the day, we were in a 10-year lease and the terms just don't work for our model. We have found we prefer to operate in small downtowns where we can really connect with our local community and work with more local landowners, the restaurant's owners wrote in a post. The owners also operate a Mason Jar Tavern location in Fuquay Varina, Mason Jar Lager Company, Tap Station, and Scratch Kitchen. The franchisees behind the new Dave's location operate a Blaze Pizza location in the Holly Springs Town Center. The center's family environment and welcoming atmosphere attracted the group to it, Mutnick says. Coastal Urge opens in Village District. Coastal Urge has opened a location in the Village District. The store sells men's and women's apparel, ranging from athletic attire to accessories. The company is owned by Claude Pope III, who also owns the clothing brand Bald Head Blues. Both companies are headquartered in Raleigh. Coastal Urge is located at 440 Daniel Street. The store will be the second location for the company. The first is located on Bald Head Island. The new store will sell attire for golf, pickleball, and tennis, along with resort wear items, sunglasses, and hats. Pope's Bald Head Blues brand will be sold in the store, along with brands like Addison Bay and G4. And finally, Rialto Theater to bring back live music. The Rialto Theater, now under new ownership, will reopen its doors for a concert series beginning in November. The series is a return to live music for the theater, which features a stage in front of its screen. It last held concerts 20 years ago. The Rialto closed last year. The business was 80 years old at the time. Longtime owner Bill Peebles cited his retirement and market conditions as reasons for the closure. Five Points Entertainment LLC, a group of local investors led by Hayes Permar, purchased the business in May. The first live music event will feature Will Hoag on November 3rd. The lineup features acts such as the Durham Symphony and the Hamiltones. Now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle Growth, Project to Remake Shopping Center, River Birch Corner to become mixed-use space in Sanford. A shopping center in Sanford is set to get a major facelift, complete with new housing, retail, and office space. Ohio real estate developer Casto has submitted new plans with the Sanford Lee County Planning Department's Technical Review Committee for the River Birch Corner Shopping Center, located at 1033 Spring Lane. The company plans for the demolition and replacement of most structures to establish a completely redesigned mixed-use space, including retail, offices, multifamily, and integrated first-floor commercial multifamily structures and associated public and private open spaces and recreational areas, nature trails, and landscaping, according to a committee agenda. Overall, Casto is planning on the new development to have 10 buildings, which will include 310 multifamily units, 170,000 square feet of commercial space, and 30,760 square feet of office space, per the plans. There will be just shy of 1,200 parking spaces throughout the mixed-use project. Casto purchased the 35-acre shopping center for $10 million in November 2022 and has several active projects throughout the triangle. A representative of the company said none of this information is available yet. When asked about construction timelines and costs, as well as estimated prices and rents for the apartments, Charlotte's Seaman Whiteside and Associates is serving as the civil engineer and landscape architect for the project. River Birch has been a major retail spot in Sanford, housing stores like Belk and JCPenney. The Belk location remains open, but the JCPenney is no longer in operation. Over time, the shopping center has atrophied, with tenants leaving and no major investments to renovate the space. Sanford continues to be a groundswell of economic growth, with a population of more than 31,000 people. However, housing has been a major issue. Jimmy Randolph, CEO of the Sanford Area Growth Alliance, said at a recent Triangle Business Journal event that 14,000 workers are coming into Lee County per day to work, and a lack of housing opportunities was a contributing factor in Sanford losing out on at least one significant life sciences project. Spring Hope population about to rise. A small town in Nash County is about to see a new housing development come online that could balloon the community's population. Bryson's Ridge, a 185-home community in the town of Spring Hope, is opening on September 9, according to project developer Tom White. Roughly 10 move-in-ready homes will be available initially. Starlight Homes of Georgia is the home builder for the project at 638 Cessna Drive near U.S. Highway 64. This one subdivision could increase the town's population by almost 40%, White says. Many of the residents of Spring Hope are excited for this growth. The population in Spring Hope as of 2020 was a little more than 1,300, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. It's located roughly 20 miles west of Rocky Mount. An LLC tied to White, Axiom Holdings LLC, acquired the dozens of acres the neighborhood sits on in 2021. And finally, a Canadian firm buys land for 850 homes. An international real estate developer has acquired a huge piece of land in Johnston County that has been marked for hundreds of new homes. An LLC tied to Canadian company Great Gulf purchased more than 272 acres of land in the county for around $14 million on August 31. The land is near the small town of Wilson's Mills. Great Gulf bought the land from an LLC tied to Georgia home builder Ashton Woods, which is a subsidiary of Great Gulf. The Ashton Woods LLC bought the land in May 2022 for close to $11 million from Raleigh developer Greenfield Communities. The previous owners had said plans for the land called for up to 850 new homes. And our last reporter's page is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. Cottages planned at Oberlin Development. Budley East project is on the rise at Oberlin, Fairview. Another component of the Budley, B-U-D-L-E-I-G-H, East development in Raleigh's Oberlin neighborhood is coming together. Williams Realty and Building Company has filed a preliminary subdivision plan with the city for the Cottage Court project within the development that's on the site of the former Country Club Homes community at the corner of Oberlin and Fairview Roads. The Budley East Cottage Court will total 13 units, with each having detached garages. The Budley East project is a partnership between Beacon Street, Grub Ventures, Williams Realty, and Clancy and Thays Construction Company. The subdivision plans subdivision plan shows the homes can't be larger than 1,800 square feet, and the detached garages can't be more than 450 square feet. The homes will be two stories, and all but one of the garages will have two spaces. The homes will sit on lots with sizes of 0.09, 0.10, and 0.15 acres. The entire project will cover 1.5 acres between Beacon Street Development's townhomes and Legacy Custom Homes units in the northeast section of Budley East. There will also be an internal courtyard spanning 0.2 acres. There will also be a decorative gate and columns on each end of the courtyard. Brian Huffman, Chief Financial Officer for Williams Realty and Building, says the company would probably break ground in July. He declined to comment further on the project. Pricing for the homes has not been released. The site is zoned R10, which under the city's missing middle zoning rules allows for higher density housing such as townhomes and cottages. The density for this project would be 8.67 units per acre. The cottage court will be at 2513 Bicton Place, which is owned by an LLC addressed to Williams Realty and Building. The company acquired the property in June for $2.925 million, according to Wake County deed records. The land was has an assessed value of $1.575 million. Hayes Barton Place, the upscale senior living community, is well underway in the northwest portion of the site. Meanwhile, three of the custom homes are under construction, with those prices are expected to be around $2 million. Budley East will also have apartments, townhomes, condominiums, and retail space. New industrial building adds to Fuquay's arena boom. A new industrial building for smaller tenants is underway at a business park north of Fuquay's arena. Fido Salmon, with his LLC, South Hill Investments, Falls of Noose, is developing a 24,990-square-foot flex warehouse building on Technology Park Lane off Highway 55. The warehouse will have 20-foot clear heights, six drive-in and two dock-high doors with a staging platform. There will be eight bays, two at 3,065 square feet, two at 3,490 square feet, and four at 2,975 square feet. Salmon says the space is geared towards smaller businesses and light industrial users. John Powell, the Phoenix Commercial Properties broker for the building, says there has been a significant amount of interest in the space. We are in conversations with end users for single bays, multiple bays, as well as several full building users, Powell says. And finally, N&O vacates downtown storefront. The News and Observer has vacated some of its office space in downtown Raleigh. The newspaper's storefront space on the ground floor at One City Plaza on Fayetteville Street is empty. There is no furniture and the walls are blank, and the large The News and Observer sign on the front of the building is gone. Highwoods Properties owns the building at 421 Fayetteville Street and doesn't have any current available listings for the ground floor or the suite that the N&O is in, Suite 104. Highwoods Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Lead, Skip Hill, says the newspaper recently downsized to about 7,200 square feet on a multi-year lease to generate some efficiencies. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Next Generation of Local Leaders is Right Here. It took a while to read through this year's Leaders in Diversity Awards nominations, but in the end, I'm not sure I've read through a more impressive pool of applicants across the scores of awards programs we do each year. If you missed the list of this year's winners, individuals, and companies, take a moment to go to our website and check them out. First, words such as diversity and equity and terms such as ESG and DEI have simply been misused or overstated across many fronts. Perhaps that's the reason why there's some resistance from a few industries that argue ideology and counterculturalism are playing a far bigger role than an effort to level the playing field for people who have not had an equal chance to succeed and be heard. Reading the accomplishments of some of our winners this year, one thing is clear. There is no DEI washing or ESG washing going on here. These individuals and companies detailed the purpose and the action plan to make their companies more accepting of different economic, social, and cultural issues. We need to hear from these people beyond their work prism. Wake County alone adds an average of more than 60 new people in our communities daily. Add Durham, Orange, and other neighboring counties, the pool of next-generation leaders is rich and exciting. From the Governor's Council to the state economic development boards and from regulatory agencies to local business booster groups, we must equip individuals such as these diversity winners with tools and resources so they can work to better our lives. According to the U.S. Census, almost 62% of North Carolina is white, blacks account for 23%, and Hispanics another 11%. In Wake County, the numbers are 58%, 21%, and 11%, respectively. While these numbers are still somewhat lopsided, they are changing and changing fast. A Carolina demography study shows most of North Carolina's incorporated places, 409 or 74%, are small, containing fewer than 5,000 residents. Combined, these 409 places have just under 590,000 total residents, or 6% of the state's population. In contrast, the five largest places, Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, Greensboro, and Winston-Salem, have a combined population of 2.2 million, or 21% of the state's population. But this is where it gets interesting for companies, business owners, regulatory bodies, and booster organizations. By 2030, about 40% of the state's population will be millennials, born between 1981 and 1996. And more than 15% will fall under the Gen Z marker, born between 1997 and 2012. And as for baby boomers, born between 1946 and 1964, they will make up a smaller share of the state's population, but the state will skew older. By 2030, 1 in 5 North Carolinians will be age 65 and older. We have an opportunity here. As a community, we are lucky to receive a constant flow of new residents from different walks of life who are trying to figure out whether neighborhood groups, state agencies, local municipalities, and private clubs are accepting of folks who look different, talk different, and perhaps have a slightly different way of communicating concerns and ideas. We will publish a detailed Q&A on this year's class of diversity winners in our October 13 issue. Make an extra effort to read about these individuals and companies and reach out to them. Your community will thank you later. And now we'll read some of the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. Our first big number, 189. That's the full capacity in megawatts for a wind farm Apex Clean Energy plans to build in Chowan County. The plan is to be operational within 2 years now that Apex has a deal with Google. $43 million. That's how much Spencer Health Solutions in Morrisville raised in a Series D funding round. The company has developed an at-home device that's designed to dispense pre-packaged medications for patients on a schedule to improve patient engagement and medication adherence. And our next number is $4.2 million. That's the amount a Mexican restaurant with triangle locations was awarded in a lawsuit against a competitor. The plaintiff, Mezcalito, has Tex-Mex restaurants in Apex and Durham. The defendant, Don Pablo's Tacos, was accused of copying Mezcalito's menu, recipes, and aspects of its business plan. And next we have $2 million. That's the amount an LLC tied to Raleigh Home Builder New Home Incorporated paid for roughly 95 acres in Johnston County. And our final big number is 10,922. That's how many rental units will be delivered in Wake County by the end of 2023, according to an apartment construction report by Rent Cafe. It puts Raleigh as the 12th largest builder in 2023. And now we'll read the quotable sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first is from Mike Easley, Jr., U.S. Attorney for North Carolina's Eastern District. Even cases with relatively small dollar PPP loans that were deemed to be fraudulent are getting federal prison time. Courts are sending PPP fraudsters to federal prison even in small dollar cases. And next we have NC Biosciences Organization President Laura Gunter on the federal government identifying 10 drugs that will be involved in the first round of Medicare price negotiations with the aim of lowering drug costs. It can take $1 billion to bring a drug to market these days, and venture capitalists are going to look elsewhere for opportunities if they think there's a chance Medicare is going to make it impossible to recoup their investment. Government price setting is going to shut off the tap of venture capital that sustains the small startup companies that are driving the innovation North Carolina's life sciences industry is known for. And next we have Jim Moore, co-owner of Balcom Business Plaza LLC, on building an 18-acre business park at 11132 U.S. Highway 401 North in Harnett County. "We quickly realized there was substantial demand for commercial flex space, RV and camper repair, and clean and enclosed storage with nice landscaping." And our final quotable is from Christina Jones, Raleigh City Council member representing District E. "I recognize that we need to be a better partner in regards to the availability of affordable housing. When I learned of the project, Affordable Housing in Northwest Raleigh, I jumped at the opportunity to bring more residents to our area." And with our remaining time, we'll read as much as we can from Triangle Inno, their innovation section. This is an article written by Lauren Onasorge. "Nuvodo targets water treatment, Raleigh firm using briquettes to better process wastewater. Kenaf, leafy bamboo-like stalks cultivated in Asia for twine and cloth, could end up in wastewater treatment plants around the world as part of the business model for a Raleigh company trying to change the process for water reclamation. Nuvodo, a biologics firm with a Kenaf farm and a 25,000-square-foot plant in Moore County, processes the stalks, grinding them to particles before reassembling them into briquettes or compressed blocks. The briquettes, once shipped to wastewater treatment facilities throughout North America and even the UK, will be dropped into the wastewater where the particles disperse. The secret is the surface area of the particles, which come from the core of the Kenaf stalk," says CEO Jonathan Lister, who joined the company 3 years ago. "And it doesn't break down under biological wastewater conditions," he says. "The particles are the media for biofilm to grow, and the biofilm growing on that Kenaf backbone works to reduce fertilizer nutrients, phosphates and nitrogen, that you definitely don't want hitting your receiving bodies of water," Lister says. Nuvodo sells the materials as a way to extend the capacity capabilities of existing wastewater treatment plants. Customers are buying in, such as the wastewater plant in Mebane, one of the first facilities to come aboard during the research and development phase more than a decade ago. And Kenaf is spelled K-E-N-A-F. We'll stop there, as the rest of the article just mentions that business is booming. They're working out of their headquarters off of Glenwood Avenue in downtown Raleigh. They're working in the United States, Canada, and the U.K., and actually now starting to discuss with potential partners in Europe. And we'll go ahead and stop there, as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.